We're taking up the Rosh Bah now. That would be on page 116 in our booklets. Second column. Hadi Amrinan, Moshe Tikin Lahem, Birkat Hazan, Yoshua Tikin Lahem, Birkat Haaretz. That's the end of quote. Says the Rosh Bah. Kashali, I have a question on this. V'alkaimelon besamoch, the Gemara states, nearby, the brachos elu midioraisa ninu, that these brachos are midioraisa. Thus, the question is, how can you say that Moshe Tikin? Moshe Tikin implies that he created the obligation. V'yesh lomar, the matbeon hu shetavu lahen. What he's saying is that the term tikein doesn't necessarily always mean that they created the obligation itself. It means that they formulated the text. But the formulation of the text, you can ask, so why are you saying tikein? Tikein means to enact. It's an ordinance. But that's also that was the ordinance. That it wasn't just a suggested text. It wasn't just some nice idea if you want to use it. It means tikein. That the text became mandatory. So that's what it's referring to. But in terms of the underlying obligation, that was always there. Now, what's the practical implication of this? The imi d'oraisa, because as far as d'oraisa is concerned, im ratza li'omra bi'eza matbeya sheyirza omra. As far as the Oraisa is concerned, there's no specific text. The Oraisa didn't mandate a text. It just mandated the obligation. Well, more than the obligation, also the idea. But that's not the same as a text. V'asu Moshe v'Yoshua v'David, and Moshe, Yoshua, and David came along. V'tiktu lahen matbeya L'cholachas v'yachas bizmana. And they formulated and ordained a text. The term I'd bay is like a coin. Coin, the text. For each one in its time. Right, so now he's working with the idea, he's going to prove it, that the very nature of the mitzvah itself does not demand this particular text. Liel, he cites the Gemara in Ketzad Mevarchim. He quotes the Gemara in Brachos, Daf Mem Amud Beis, where the Gemara says that v'al kulam, with regard to all the foods, imama shahakal yata. That is to say that all the foods have specific brachos that are particular, relate to them, but the eved, after the fact, if a person said shahakal, he was yotze. Because that's a universal form of praise, that the God is the creator of all foods. So chatzil, of course, is supposed to be specific. But b'di'eved yoyotze. Then it mentions the following: Binyamin Raya, Korach Rifta. There was a shepherd Binyamin who broke bread, who ate bread. The Amar Baruch Mare Dehai Pita. Afterwards, not before. He quotes it over here, the Rosh Bah, Basa D'Yachal. He's interpreting the Gemara. After he ate, so he had to bench. So he said a very shortened version, Baruch Morei Dahai Pita. Blessed is the creator of this bread. Amar Rav Yotza. So Rav said he was Yotze. That is, Yotze what? Birkas HaMazon would seem. It's at this point Birkas HaMazon. Then the Gemara says, the Amar Rav called bracha she'im b'haskaras Hashem ain't a bracha. That any bracha which doesn't have haskaras Hashem. It doesn't mention malcha, so apparently according to Rav, it has to have a haskaras Hashem would be sufficient. It's not a bracha. Well, let me ask you a question. You're all familiar with the halacha that after Shabbos, you know you're not allowed to do malacha even if Shabbos is over without Havdalah. So a device that's suggested is sometimes you're not going to, well, you daven. So you daven, you say Abdullah and Shimon Esrei. But let's say you're not going to daven for a while. Sometimes Tisha B'Av comes out on Matzoy Shabbos, and you're going to drive to the shul to daven Ma'ariv and then say the Eicha, but you can't drive the car. So the simple suggestion is say Baruch Hamavdil Ben Kodesh L'chol. And that's considered Avdola. But where's the shame? There's no shame and there's no malchus. You're not mentioning God's name. Blessed is he who differentiates between the holy and the profane. Of course, he is a reference to God. But you know, but the Rav is saying you have to mention God. You can't just Baruch Mori the High Pita. He was also referring to God. It means to say that that's not really a bracha. There's no chi of bracha in that situation. There are certain cases where there's a chi of bracha. Here there's no chi of bracha. It's simply a chi of to be mavdol, to differentiate. So that's appropriate, because you can't. How do you express? You have to express it by reference to the one who differentiates. But it doesn't have to take on the structure of a bracha. Here, however, you're talking about Birkas HaMazon. Birkas HaMazon has to be a bracha. So how can you say that? Baruch Mari Dehai Pita. You have to mention God's name. So the Gemara answers, the Omar Baruch Rachmana Mari Dehai Pita. That's what he said. The Gemara didn't report the full wording, but obviously, we assume that he did mention God's name, Rachmana. Rachmana is God, the merciful one. Okay, fine, so we resolved that problem, but we've got another problem over here, and that problem is, what about the rest of the benching? What was the Yotze? The first bracha, the second bracha, the third bracha, what was the Yotze? So the Gemara says, V'alba'in and Shalosh brachas, but we require three blessings. My yotza de ka'amarav, nami yotza yidei bracha rishona. It means he was yotze bracha rishona. The Gemara is acknowledging that Rav did not mean to say that he was yotze birkas hamazon completely. So when he said yotza, his answer was very specific, was very particular. That is to say, the question arose, but Binyamin Raya said, Baruch Rachmana Dehai Pita, Mare Dehai Pita, the creator of this bread. And Rav said, yeah, he's Yotze. But he didn't mean to say Yotze the whole Birkas HaMazon, just Yotze that bracha.
Is that more?
We're going back now to the Rashba. The Rashba picks up the discussion in the Gemara at this point. Because the next question that the Gemara asks is quoted by the Rashba. And that question is, my kamashmalon. What is the chiddush? So Gemara says that this is obvious. Gemara doesn't see it as a problem. So then the question becomes, what my kamashmalon? What's he teaching us? What's the chiddush? So the Gemara tries to answer this question by citing the fact that he didn't say it in Hebrew. He said it in Aramaic, which is tantamount to saying that he said it the Lashon Chol. In ordinary language. So the Gemara says, but that's not a chiddush. Taninan, we learned Elu Nemar and Bechal Lashon. The Gemara then quotes the Mishnah that mentions those things that can be said in any language. So among them are Kriya Shema, Tfilo, Birkas HaMazon. So there are many things that can be said in any language. By the way, it's a good thing to know practically that the Birkas HaMazon can be said in any language, because very often you get with people that don't know Hebrew. The truth of the matter is, for many people, it will be preferable to say it in English, because at least this way they'll know what they're saying, which is not an insignificant thing. Same is true with regard to tefillah. A significant, perhaps majority even of people that daven in Hebrew don't really know what they're saying. So kavanah and tefillah is the whole thing. Anyways, the Gemara is saying, we already learned that Birkas HaMazon can be said in Lashon Chol. So the fact that he's Baruch Mari the High Pita is not a Chiddush. So what do we learn from this? The Gemara says, it's the Rech. It's still necessary. Salkatai Techamina. I would have thought, Ki Amar B'Lashon Chol, Yatza, that he fulfills his obligation when he said it in a secular language. Hecha di amrinon ki hechi de takinu la rabbanon. That's only when he said it in accordance with the manner of the takana. Which means what? When he translates the text. He still has to have a text. You can't free yourself from the obligation of the text. So when the Mishnah is saying that you could say it in any language, it means translation. Because that's the question. Once you translate it from Hebrew, is that considered the same matbea? Does it have the character of the matbea? There's no question everyone will agree that the best way to say it is in Hebrew. Because that's the clearest, that's the most accurate expression of the ideas. The translation always diminishes somewhat, but the question arises, is it still the bracha? And the answer is yes. Oh, so now I would interpret the Mishnah that says you could say it in any language, meaning to say you can translate, but you still have to have the matbea. But he just discarded the matbea completely. Not only did he go to a different language, but he went to a different text. He didn't use the text. He just said what he wanted to say. That's the big chiddush. Kamash malan. So Rav came to tell you that your yotze, even though you didn't use the vehicle of the text that was ordained. Before we go further to get the answer of the Rashba, I just want to remind everybody in the group that basically the answer of the group, when we first took this up, was in a different direction. It was a sophisticated answer, and it was saying that these are elements, that Birkas HaMazon, in its entirety, has to contain certain elements of praise. But due to the very nature of the praise, they didn't come into vogue, so to speak. They were not relevant or appropriate until the events that they make reference to actually occurred. So that before the inheritance of the land, there was no bracha for the land. And Birkas HaMazon was complete with Hazan. And before the construction of the Beis HaMikdash, there was no bracha for the Amigdash. That was the answer that the group had worked out. Now we're going to have to see whether what we said was in line with the Rashba. The Alma says the Rashba, Hamad Beya, Hu Shetavu Rabbanan. Thus we see that it's the Matbeya, it's the text which the Rabbanan established. Ubevadai the Kodem Kibusha Aretz, and certainly prior to the conquest of the land, Ubinyan Yerushalayim, and the building of Yerushalayim, Lo hayu omrim kimat beya she'amru li'achar kibush Ubinyan. They didn't say in the same matbea, the same text, as they said afterwards. But one second. But what emerges is they did say something. What he's saying then is that these brachos were in existence, but they were left in an unformulated state. And he's using the case of Binyamin Raya to prove, this is the case of Binyamin, is even after the Matbea. After they were masaking the Matbea, he still says you Yotze if you didn't use the Matbea. But certainly, prior to the establishment of the Matbea, they did fulfill the Birkas Aretz, they did fulfill the Birkas Yerushalayim, but how? Informal, each person said it in his own way, there was no formalized text. And rather, the way we understand it is different. That the events of the conquest of the land and the building of Yerushalayim did not bring into existence the obligation for those brachos, but merely was the occasion for the formulation of the particular text. And he says another thing, though, if you notice very carefully. He's saying another point along the same lines. What's he saying over here? He's saying that the way they said it was different. He's not telling us anything more about that. But what they said before the conquest was different than what they said after. And he proves that. He proves that the idea, the form of the bracha changes with the situation. That's another part of his answer. His proof is with Kamosha, Ein Anu Omrim Bi Osamat Beya Shetik Nadav Rishlama. We don't say the third bracha according to the Takana of David and Shlomo. She Anu Mavakshim Lahachzir HaMalchus. In the third bracha, we request the return, the restoration of the kingship of David and the building of the Beis HaMikdash. But you can't say that that was their bracha. When David and Shlomo didn't make a request for a restoration, they just built it. Their prayer was for the continuation, that it should remain in a state of existence. But that could not be said anymore. Once it was destroyed, even though, as we explained yesterday, in a metaphysical sense, it was never destroyed. But practically speaking, in a physical sense, it was destroyed. So that didn't remove the bracha, but then it manifests itself in terms of its real existence. It exists insofar as it's going to be restored. It's missing. It's in existence, but it's missing. It's a very important concept as far as the Migdash is concerned. Perhaps the question can be asked on the Rashba. That is, on Monday we were assuming that there was no obligation of Birkas Haaretz when they didn't have the land. And that explains why Yoshua wasn't Misakein, or Moshe wasn't Misakein. That's the question we were asking. And thus, the existence of the obligation is contingent upon the situation. And now you're telling me that it's not. That the obligation for Birkas Haaretz and the obligation for Birkas Yerushalayim, that exists from day one, even prior to any of these events. So if that's the case, now the question is, and we also see that the Chacham did not want to leave it to each person to make up his own version, that it's very important to have a good version and a uniform version. So if that's the case, why weren't they Misakein from day one? Why wasn't Moshe Misakein in the whole benching? Birkas Haaretz and Birkas Yerushalayim? Why was the tikkun, if all we're saying now is that they were Misakein, that they came along and gave it a form, so why is that contingent upon these particular events? Either you're saying that if you say there's no obligation until you have the events, so then it's fine. That explains why they came along and they were Misakein. Because before that there was no inyan, there was no obligation. But now you're telling me that beforehand there was an obligation. So if that's the case, then what's the understanding that Yeshua wasn't Misakein until they entered the land? And David and Shlomo until then. Why? Hundreds of years went by when they had the obligation, and there was no formulation. What's the connection? What's the connection between the phenomena and the formulation? That's being suggested, that perhaps prior to the inheritance of the land, of course, according to the Rashba, the indication is that you had to say Birkas Haaretz. But the form that the Birkas Haaretz took would be different. Now, the idea that's being presented is that it was Hodaya. However, the Hodaya could not be, you couldn't give thanks to God for inheriting the land when you hadn't inherited it yet. Which makes perfect sense, by the way. I could show you an illustration of that. Oz Yoshi and Moshe, the Shira, Aliyah. And let's say that before the miracle, Moshe knew what God was going to do. But at that point in time, even if Moshe knew, and even if Moshe told the people that this is exactly what's going to happen, it wouldn't make sense for people to give Shira at that point. Because the Shira always has to be in response to the actual phenomenon itself. So the mere fact that you know a miracle is going to take place, yet you don't have to thank God for the miracle until it actually occurs, the experience. So now the suggestion is that before the inheritance of the land, they could still give praise for the land, but they would have to take on a different form. That they're praising God because He promised us the land, or He's going to give us the land. I guess the promise, because the whole thing is based upon the promise. So you could say, suggested that perhaps instead of Shein Chalto Lavoseinu, well, it is Shein Chalto Lavoseinu, that's the truth, but in a different way. That you were Maftiach, that you promised to our fathers. Thus, we can and formulate a way in which you can have a meaningful expression of this idea. And as far as the third bracha is concerned, that's not a problem at all, because just like now we're praying for the restoration, so before they could have prayed for the construction in the first place. That's not that much of a difference between the after the destruction and what took place before the destruction. I'll tell you though what's bothering me, if that's the case, if the material was there, so why didn't it lend itself to formulation? So why wasn't Moshe Masagen? A text for whatever, incorporating into that text what would be relevant for that situation. Just like now we have a text for the third bracha, which incorporates, made a change from the original text, incorporates what's relevant for us to say today. See, what's bothering me is I don't quite understand that simply because they had not yet inherited the land physically, so you have this ambivalence. Yeah, on the one hand, that's not enough to remove the obligation of a bracha that pertains to the land. So you do have the obligation, but it is enough to remove us from making a formulated text. Why? I just want to suggest some possibilities over here, and that is that the three components of Birkas HaMazon, if we're going to talk in a general sense, is Shevach Lashem. The first is praise to God, and that's independent of whether we're the Jewish people, there was a Jewish people, or whether they gave the Torah, that's independent. It's the obligation of Adam, of mankind, to recognize the Creator and the greatness of the Creator in terms of his relationship to the world, setting up a system, in terms of the laws of nature. That's what it's all about. It doesn't have anything to do with the Jews. It's all about the universe, not just even people. It's even about Cholbos, even about the animals. The magnificence of God in terms of as it is expressed, manifested in the creation, his creation. We know God through the creation. The idea, the general idea of the second bracha is a separate concept altogether, and that is the providential, that God relates to us providentially. God is not as simply as one who set up the system and then just allows it to go its own way, but God has a particular objective, and God plays an active role in leading the world towards its objective. So God's providence in terms of the Jewish people sets up an ummah. That's the Jewish people. That's the second. That's Hodaya. That's us. The second one is about us. We're not really talking anymore about God as he manifests himself in terms of the scheme of the nature and so on and so forth. Of course, this is for the world as well, because the ultimate objective of the Jewish people is to teach mankind, but that's the ultimate objective. Here we have personal praise. And the personal praise is how God relates to us as an ummah, as a nation. It's not an individual thing either. It's the ummah, that God took us out of Egypt, that God redeemed us. And brischa, the shechasamta bifsareinu, it's the ummah. We're talking as members of a specific nation. So this is Hodaya, this is Thanksgiving. That's the essence of the second bracha. And it's relevant day one. The interesting thing is that all this is formulated around what? The land. Why? Because that's the nation fulfills its objective and its purpose when it inhabits the land. That's the setting. That's the setting in which the nation is to manifest, to experience its objective, its way of life, to set up its system. So God gave us a goodly land. He gave us all the tools, all the elements of nationhood. And of course, that's why it says that whoever omitted Bris and Torah doesn't have the bracha of the Eretz, because then it's not Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is not the physical phenomenon, obviously. It's a place which is designated for a particular nation. That's for sure. Now, let's perhaps suggest, the way the Rashba is saying, is that before they entered the land, they still had the obligation of Birkas HaMazon. And the obligation of Birkas HaMazon does have the component of Hodaya. Hodaya of what? Hodaya for those elements that pertain to us as an ummah. So they still had to give Hodaya for Yetzias Mitzrayim, for all the other things that are included over here. That element had to be there. The only thing is that something was lacking. The expression of the Hodoya Bishleimusa was only with regard to the inheritance of the land, because that's when all these things come together. And in terms of the Ummah, they reach their prime state, so to speak. So that's when they entered into the land, then as an expression. In terms of the form of Birkas Haaretz, that's when Yoshua formulated it. Until that point in time, in terms of formulation, it couldn't have its ideal state. In terms of the formulation. Because there was an element that was lacking. And that is the element of the Yerusha Sa'aretz. Once you had Yerusha Sa'aretz, so the Hodoya aspect of Birkas HaMazon can now be formulated. So until that point, it wasn't formulated. Meaning to say that the formulation only takes place when all the elements are present. That would remove the question. That's true, that after the destruction of Yerushalayim and the Mikdash, we still have the tefillah. But that, to begin with, the tikkun, the formulation, is only when you have the elements are in existence. So, that explains the second bracha. As far as the third bracha is concerned, yeah, Birkas HaMazon is also a tefillah. A tefillah which relates to the idea of, it's called the Aretz HaTov. There's three ideas. Well, one is Hazan, of course. That's Hashem Elokecha. That's Birkas Hazan. But then you have Hodaya. And Hodaya has to do with the fact that God set us aside as an Ummah. And the third one is really a tefillah, and that tefillah has to do with the ultimate objective, that they're taking in the idea of Kiddush Hashem, that God's name should be magnified. That's been in Yerushalayim, is really the magnification of God's name. So that has to do with the Beis HaMikdash. There too, that tefillah could not have its appropriate, was not in its appropriate state until it was established. So there was no takana. And there was a bakasha. Whatever they were mavakesh, it was just a bakasha. Once the phenomenon came into existence, this called for the tefillah in its pristine form. And it was for the hamada. Now that it's established, so it's a different, your tefillah relates to an existing entity, so now you have to be mispalo. That's when they were masaking the bracha. From this point, you see, that's when it becomes important that the bracha have an objective form and it be established in the most perfect way. Now that it's... See, before that, you don't have the... It's in a state of flux. We don't know what the situational phenomenon. So a person has to include it on his own. It's a reference. You have to make a reference to it. Now it's a different phenomenon. Now it becomes a subject matter for a formalized bracha. Whereas beforehand, it's an obligation that the person has to make a reference to it. That's the way I understand the Rashba. To try and speculate what they said before Yoshua was Masakin is difficult, especially in light of the fact that what he's saying is that each person said it his own way, so it's impossible to speculate what each person would say. But I would use the example of Binyamin Raya. What did he say as far as the first bracha, Hasan and Sa'olam, is all these sophisticated ideas and so forth, and what did he say? Baruch Rachmanam Arei Dehai Pita. Broke it down to the most minimal expression. If that is the case, what would a person like that say for the second bracha? Let's say he simply said, Nod Lecha Hashem Elokeinu Al Kol HaTovo Sha'asisa Imanu V'yam Avaseinu. Something like that.